Hey y'all, and welcome to episode 3 of Launch and Learn. Yeehaw! In this podcast, we talk to entrepreneurs about their experiences in starting and launching startups. This podcast is hosted by Matthias Dickerhof and Alexander Thompson. Today, we have Jan Saratz on as a guest, and he's going to talk to us about Cilantro, a Shopify-type solution for restaurants. Jan will share his learnings on building products and the importance of creating a viable business model. So welcome, Jan, to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Now to start out with, it would be great if you could tell us about your background, you know, just really, what is your story?
Okay, sure. So I was born and raised in Switzerland. I'm originally from the Swiss mountain part, from the southeastern part of Switzerland. But I spent most of my early life in Zurich, went to school there. I studied mechanical engineering here in Zurich and left quite early already during the studies to China for certain exchanges. In total during my studies, 2 years in China. And also after I graduated, very quickly after, during my first job, I ended up working in China. So I spent then about 11 years in Asia, in China and Singapore. I did an MBA at INSEAD during that time as well, and just came back last year to Switzerland to start with Sparrow Ventures.
And why did you, you know, decide to go to Asia for these 11 years?
I think Switzerland, or probably like any other place, just becomes very small after 20 plus years. And I was really interested to work or live in a different culture, in a different cultural environment, and to personally and professionally learn more. And in particular, China was at that time just a huge boom economy, still kind of is, but at that time in the early 2000s, it was really, it was China. If you wanted to go into a fast growing emerging economy, it was China.
And how did that get started, sort of going from a engineering background to first inclinations that you wanted to become an entrepreneur and become an entrepreneur in Asia?
You know, I never really planned too much. I think things always happened step by step, or things fell into place, or just happened also without a specific reason. So when I graduated my engineering studies, I was first interning at a large investment bank, and then this was just before the financial crisis, and I generally didn't see myself working in this financial environment because it didn't excite me too much. So I went back to work for ABB, which is a large industrial company, and they had a lot of business manufacturing and business in China, and I knew they will provide the opportunity to go back to China, because during the studies I really enjoyed it very much. And even before, during the studies, I built my first really small business, which was basically a website where expats could rent a chef who comes to their home and cooks Chinese food. And this was a very small business. I had actually a local business partner, and he was the chef and organized the whole culinary, the whole catering side of the business. And I built the website and helped him to acquire customers. So this was a very exciting project, and it was my first dip into entrepreneurship. And then working corporate for a few years, I very soon realized that I don't want to become an executive of a large industrial company. And I was questioning the corporate career track. And then after 3 years working for ABB in China, I left the company and started a food delivery business, an online food delivery business. And so, I think the reason why I started my own business was because I was questioning the corporate career track. And at that age, I was willing to take a lot of risk, which at the end I didn't consider as risk at all. But I just took the leap, or let's say, I just without thinking too much, jumped on this idea and started executing.
Yeah, so you went from ABB to Nosh. I'm sure there were some cultural differences, because even when you work in Asia, if you work for a large company, there's a lot of Western, I'm sure, cultural aspects to it. I mean, when you were starting the new company, what were some of the things you learned about, you know, hiring people and getting people on your team and how to build a good culture in a foreign market?
Yeah, I mean, it was very challenging, but exciting at the same time, because in food and beverage, I mean, we were my co-founder. He is a German guy, and the rest were all local Chinese, as of Chinese from all over the country, because usually they in F&B, it's usually very low qualified talent. Mm-hmm. So of course, from building a team we were at the peak, we were about 40 plus people. It was very important to have the right managers on board who can really manage the whole organization very effectively. And for us, it was important, of course, to have these, to be able to manage the mid-management and the key people of the company. But the cultural difference, of course, was huge. But at the end, what was more challenging are more like the local regulations or like the culture, how to deal with landlords, the bureaucracy, the authorities. And at that time, yeah, we could adapt quite fast, because there was not, I mean, the regulations were not written in stone, and you could, with good relationships with the government people, you could basically make sure that you could operate smoothly. So that was a big learning, like, you know, here in Switzerland, you would have set this up completely different than in China. So more like the stakeholder management there was very important. And this was a big learning.
Very good. Great. So, I mean, you definitely have quite a background in food, as we know, multiple companies around the world. It's very interesting if you sort of could tell us about, you know, especially Cilantro, you know, what is Cilantro and, you know, what motivated you to start this company?
Maybe at this point, let me quickly explain what it was. It was a white label online ordering solution for restaurants. Think of a Shopify, an e-commerce channel builder for restaurants. And so we had some very strong signals that there is a need for this product. We also knew that the e-commerce, F&B e-commerce market is growing very fast and very much. So, yeah, I think there were several reasons. First, because after Nosh Delivery, which was the food delivery business, I went to do the MBA. It was a one-year program. And after the MBA, I started to work for a family office where we built fast casual dining chains. So that's pretty much, that's retail, food and beverage retail chains. And there I learned the whole operational part of quite large scale food operations, food retail operations. And during that time, I saw a market gap. I saw that our company spent a lot of money for an online ordering solution, a white label online ordering solution. And I really, through my expertise in this industry, I saw that there is a market gap. And the second reason was I really wanted to start my own business again. I was incentivized with equity during this time with this family office, but it's of course something very different if you run your own business. And the third reason was because I wanted to move into tech. I had, of course, with the online food delivery business, we had some basic tech. We used some basic tech, also a POS system, online ordering solution. But for me, coming from a very operational heavy industry like food retail, I wanted to try to move more into tech. So yeah, I think that were probably the main reasons.
So regarding Cilantro, could you sort of, you know, talk us through creating the minimum viable product? You know, how did you guys get started on taking it as an idea, validating it, and then actually building this product?
So what we did with our MVP, because, yeah, we already had some very strong signals that this is a very good, that the solution we had in mind solves a real problem. First was my own company. as one data point, which really spent close to 200,000 Singapore dollars on building their own tech. Then we saw some competitive products on the market already. We jumped directly into product development without, we actually, by mistake, skipped the lean approach, and we already started to build quite a sophisticated product. And because we were not experienced in building software products ourselves, we worked with a software development company of a friend of mine, which was a mistake as well, to outsource the MVP or the product development. But because we wanted to move fast, we decided to go that down that route. And then we had, after probably almost a year, we had a product in the market, which was fine. And we acquired customers quite fast and we could deploy it quite fast. But we realized very quickly, because the product was outsourced, that we could not extend it in the way we wanted. And we very quickly saw the limitations of the quality of the code, the restrictions resulting from the data architecture and so on. So we literally had to scrap the whole product and build it from scratch with our own developers. And this took us another 6 months. So for about 1.5 years, for the first year, we didn't have any product. Then for half a year, we had a crappy product. And then we actually only started to really grow fast after 1.5 years. And that was a very painful learning, a very costly learning. But it was such a painful learning that it set the tone for our focus or our processes or discipline going forward. So because we almost went out of business before we were in business, we really took this very seriously. And then when we built the second version of the product, we, for the first months, we didn't even code any, we didn't write one line of code. We literally looked what does this product need to be able to do in 2 years, in 3 years? And then we built really a fantastic product, which I assume was also a reason why we could exit it at one point, because the quality of the product, the documentation, how we could hand it over, integrate it into different, into other solutions. This was done very well and also created a lot of value.
So we've had two other people so far that we've talked to you about building companies, and they both use agencies as well, but they had, you know, much better success and better relationship. What do you think made your relationship with the agency you used turn so south so quickly?
So we spent quite a lot of money on this whole product. We also gave equity, of course, to the agency. The biggest problem was that the agency didn't have the back end in-house. So they again contracted a back end company. And then, I mean, you know, we were discussing this risk about the finger pointing at one point if there is an issue. So this is just a completely wrong setup. I mean, this is literally basically a mistake we shouldn't have done, because just some advisors said we should not do it in that way. We just said we want to go to market fast and relatively cheap. So working with this agency of a friend offered itself. It was a clear mistake. But again, retrospectively, I'm almost thankful to really have had to make this lesson very, very painfully and very early on, because it kind of made us really, when it came to product development, I think we were able to build something really amazing from then going forward.
For the second launch, you mentioned that, you know, you did not do outsourcing, you didn't write a single line of code. So can you take us through how did you then manage to build the product?
Yeah. So first we hired people. And there, I mean, I don't have any any advice. I think it was pure luck. I mean, we got our front end lead and back end lead. They were just amazing, very quantitative guy. I mean, they were just really, really amazing. So what we did is for a month, we literally mapped, you know, because this product is quite complex. I mean, it's way more complex than a Deliveroo marketplace and so on. So we really had to think about also with the CRM part, you know, your loyalty points, discounts, features, discount code generator, and so on. And with the whole product, the menu setup, how you do differentiators, variations, you know, medium, burger mediums, small, large, or, you know, how you combine different products. We first really mapped everything on paper first. And this also helped us a lot to then explain to the developers exactly what needs to be done. So actually, it probably saved us time, even if we spent the first months not writing any code.
Hmm. I guess also that sounds a bit like almost the vision of what you want. But were you able to build all of this from the beginning, or did you have to say, okay, you know what, we prioritize this X, Y set features?
Yeah, I think, and this was even in the second round, this was a little bit of a mistake. Maybe it was also a little bit, I think, well, not only a Swiss problem, but we love to build perfect products. Well, there's a lot of people who love to build and perfect products. And that's, of course, the wrong approach. We probably should have gone to market much earlier with much less features, because what we didn't learn at all is, you know, how are the customers ticking? What kind of personas are there? How does their day-to-day work look like? What are their other issues around operating a restaurant? I mean, I had there, of course, a lot of experience, but, you know, you're biased. You're one data point. So, yeah, we built a fantastic product. And at the end, we could literally serve a lot of different customer segments, from small restaurants to fast casual chains. But again, I think that's a mistake. I think you should define your target customer very narrowly and build the minimal viable features or product you need to solve a very particular problem, and then test and iterate. So we build a product, one size matches it all, and that's very costly, right? It's time consuming. It's you need a lot of developers. The product just gets way too complex. So yeah, I think that's another big learning, right? I mean, stay lean and build what you need and then take it from there.
So my parents actually have a restaurant where they've been running one for a while, and they avoided going on some of these big deliveries websites because of the high commissions they take. And so I can definitely see the attractiveness of restaurants getting on your platform. What was your sales approach for that? And what did you find your conversion rates like?
So probably 90% of our customers, they used our solution concurrently to these food marketplaces like Foodora or, you know, Deliveroo. Because what they did is, you're right, these marketplaces are a necessary evil for the restaurants. They hate them, but still it's for them the easiest low effort way how to do online, how to sell online. So since it's a necessary evil, they liked our solution concurrently because they could basically convert customers to their own channel, which was powered by our engine, also by our solution. And there, of course, they paid, you know, their €99 flat fee. So no commission-based business model. And our sales distribution approach was purely, at least at the beginning, I mean, more than 95% of our customers came through direct outbound sales. So literally calling restaurants, writing emails, visiting restaurants, showing the demo, a very costly acquisition channel because you need a direct sales team. and you need it in each city or in each market. So, and this was at the end also why we didn't grow so fast, because we were not able to raise a proper funding round. So we were on the sales side. There were two people in Hong Kong, myself with a sales guy in Singapore at the beginning, and this was how we sold the product.
Okay. And how did you manage sort of, you had a branch in Singapore, in Hong Kong, and I think also in Berlin. How did you manage that from a company and operational and just generally from a business perspective?
Yeah, I mean, that was actually a clear mistake. It was also a little bit, yeah, I think it was the personal setup we had. My business partner, he was in Berlin. He didn't want to move away. I was happy in Singapore, and the market was there. I mean, Asia, in particular in these big cosmopolitan cities, food delivery, online ordering, it was way more progressed than in Europe. So we reasoned ourselves that this makes sense like that. But the distance of a small team of in particular two co-founders is not ideal, and is actually, I would not do this anymore. So yeah, I think we could have the right approach would have been, you decide on one market, you go in there, you go deep, you make it work in one market, and then you start to expand. So yeah, I think this was not a good setup from the beginning, created more challenges than benefits.
So you mentioned that it took actually, you know, 1 year to launch the first product and 1.5 years in total to actually get the second product out. That's quite a long time. So how did you manage with finances? Did you get funding or was it self-funded?
So we had a few angel investors. So we started with 200,000 funding. At the beginning, we didn't have a lot of, most of it went into product anyways. So for us, of course, I mean, for the whole 3 years, I had a very irregular income. And that's maybe another point which I would not recommend to anyone, because you take a big risk already. So at least make sure that you get paid, you know, a basic salary which covers your expenses. So yes, I think we were just bootstrapping it really hardcore. Well, no, it's actually the wrong expression. Since we had some funding, it was not bootstrapping, but we were really very capital efficient, and we didn't pay ourselves almost nothing for the first 1.5 years.
Very cool. It would be great to hear also, how did your involvement in the company end?
Yeah, I think we then were working very closely with an accelerator in Germany, with Metro, and we were able to join their pilot program, which gave us access to a lot of restaurants where we could just deploy our solution. And we then started to get to know the German ecosystem, the food tech ecosystem, got to talk to POS providers for integrations with restaurant table reservation platforms. And one of these solutions, we were then also starting to pitch them for fundraising. We were at that time fundraising, and they saw actually the value in the product, and they wanted to, so it was a table reservation platform, and they wanted to build their own transactional or integrate their own transactional online ordering solution. And I think just with the trust we built and the relationship we built, this opportunity occurred that we started to talk about really a full acquisition of the technology. And yeah, we had then to, me and my co-founder had to sit down and really look at what makes sense and if we want to continue to build this business. And we saw the challenges on one side, and we saw the opportunity also long-term to build this, continue to build this product as well. So it was then it was quite a difficult process. And yeah, I think at the end, we came out of this process deciding to take this opportunity and sell the company to this table reservation platform. And it was a very good outcome for us at the end, where we also could, hand over the product. We continued to work with them for another more than 3 months. We made integrations, helped them to develop the product further. And then they paid as well. And we said, that's a good end of this first tech startup. And we very soon later started another business. And I think this is what our passion is about. And I think we are now at the point where we know much better how to build a tech business than we were at the time with Cilantro.
And talking about, let's say, the mistakes that you made, reflecting back, what do you wish you had known, when you first started out?
So I think the biggest learning, or let's say also the reason why we saw some weaknesses in the business model of Cilantro, and this was also the reason why we took the opportunity to sell it, it was that product market fit is not enough. So you can build an amazing product with a very strong product market fit. If you cannot identify a scalable acquisition channel, you will just have a tugboat. You will be able to build a business, but it will take very long time, and it will always be an uphill battle. So I think the biggest learning is that it actually really requires four aspects to make a business model really very attractive and to reduce the risk of, or increase the chances of success. And one is, of course, product market fit. The second one I mentioned is the channel fit. I mean, that you are able to identify scalable acquisition channel. And the third one would be the market potential, right? I mean, I think at Cilantro, the market potential is there. I have no doubt. And this was not, let's say, one area which we had we were not able to validate. And the fourth one would be just that the business model itself can result in profits. I mean, are the unit economics working? Is the business model how you make money? The margins, is this working per se on a unit basis? And I think those are probably the four main. There are of course a lot of other things like competitive environment and so on. But I would say those are very important elements of a business model or of a business which need to be there to be able to build a successful business.
Did you try any scalable sales techniques, or what did you try, and why do you think it didn't work?
You know, the thing is, we were then also switching to, basically switching to inbound, like to let the customers come to your website. And so there you have the big problem that this self-serve solution, it also has to be extremely simple. Otherwise, people will not be able to use it. And we considered our solution to be extremely simple, but due to all these functionalities and so on, you cannot just let somebody give access, a login, and then they start building their menu. It just needs a manual onboarding. And so for me, I think the realization came that if you work with restaurants, they are not very sophisticated. You really need a customer success team, which is costly. And you need a direct sales team for this type of product, which we sold. And I think we were not thinking about these aspects of the business at all for the first 1.5 years until we started to interact with them and start learning about them, how they tick and how they function. So I think that's probably the main learning. I would look at Cilantro now at day one. I would validate all these aspects of the business much earlier on and not just focus on product market fit.
Anything else from you, Matthias?
Yeah, did you bring a quote with you today? Can you share?
I think it goes really in line with what I with what I mentioned. I'll just I think the this quote, which I feel extremely, which resonates with me extremely, is intelligent individuals learn from everything and everyone. Average people learn from their experiences, and stupid people already have all the answers. So that's a quote from Socrates, but why I resonate so much with it is because I think my first tech startup was the second one, which you would say average people learn from their experiences and failures. So yeah, I think some mistakes could really have been avoided by learning from everything and everyone else.
Very cool. Thank you very much, Jan. So where can our listeners connect with you online?
Yeah, so I'm now not anymore on Facebook. I don't have any Instagram account, so I'm not a... so the best thing is probably through LinkedIn. There, you can connect me. You can connect with me. You can text me. I'm also not on Twitter, so I think LinkedIn would be the best way how to get in touch.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. It's great to hear from you.
Great. Thanks. It was interesting.
Thanks so much for listening today and for making it to the end of the episode. I hope you learned something. Our theme song is The Vendetta by Stefan Kartenberg. If you want to connect with us or send in your guest recommendations, drop us a line at lunch.learn@gmail.com or connect with Alex or myself on LinkedIn. Otherwise, have a great week and we'll see you next time on Launch and Learn.